Bernard Docker walks in, shoots, scores! Jacob Bernard Docker, and it's 3-0 Canada. Bobby Brink swings that back to Jones along. Richard scores! Might have been tipped in the high slot there by Shane Pinto, and a power play goal gives the United States a 1-0 lead.
Tommy Buck, the defenseman activating on you as he covered the other way. Grand mismatch, leaving one wide open. Johnny Tykonic, 3-0 USD.
TSN 1200.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back. Hour 4 is underway on a beautiful, sunny Wednesday morning. A little chilly out there. We're getting up to 7 degrees a little bit later on, though. A little bit of hockey talk for you. It is, I think, extremely rare to have one team's, to have as many players as the Ottawa Senators have playing for one team, be it a college team, in this case, North Dakota, or a junior team, but that was the case. And not only three players, Simmer, but three top picks, right? Shane Pinto and Johnny Tykonic were both second-rounders, and Jacob Bernard Docker, a late first-rounder. So, to have that many really well-regarded prospects playing for one in this season, a former, I don't know what I'm saying here, a college team is pretty rare.
It really is. And in this particular case, you're thrilled. I mean, that's not necessarily why you drafted, but when you do draft a player, and you probably knew that he was committed, in the case of Pinto, to a great program, when you look at the development pattern, the great coaching over the years, boy, that they've been a powerhouse as UND for many, many years in collegiate hockey.
All right, and we're having a fantastic season this year until the season, as all sports did, both collegiate and junior and professional, went on pause. And has now been canceled. The man who headed up the season, the great season that was, joins us this morning on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. It's former NHLer, Brad Barry, joining us this morning. How you doing this morning, Brad?
Doing well. Good morning, fellas.
And by the way, happy birthday. I was going through some hockey birthdays today. It's your 55th birthday today.
Well, I really appreciate that. I know, obviously, as you get older, you kind of don't want those birthdays to come that frequently, but it is what it is, and thank you very much.
Yeah. By the way, congratulations. You got Coach of the Year. Fantastic year that you had. How disappointing to have things come to an end the way that they did for you.
Well, it was very disappointing. We felt we had the team that could probably compete for another national championship here in U.S. college hockey, and we had our team was comprised of some really, really good players, and even better players. They're great people, and we had a record of 26-5-4 leading into the postseason play, and then it abruptly came to an end. So obviously, it was disappointing, and obviously, I really feel sorry for our senior players that don't get a chance to put on the jersey again, not knowing that what could have happened this year.
And to that, Brad, we had that with the Auto 67s here. This is not pro hockey. You roll back the entire roster. To your point, how different will the roster look for your program next year with seniors and with a lot of kids nowadays leaving before their eligibility is done?
Yeah, and that's the day we live in now. And I think one of the things is you hope to have your players here for 4 years, but if you don't, well, then we're here to get great degrees for our college degrees for our young men coming through here, but also a great opportunity to play at the highest level they can in pro hockey. And again, like I said, it's one of those things that, we have to determine, they have to determine as well as if they're ready for that jump. And, we're going through that right now.
The NCAA decided a couple of days ago that for student athletes that play in spring sports, they were going to allow seniors to come back and play again next year. They did not extend that to the winter sports like hockey and like basketball. When that decision came down, what were your thoughts?
Well, I think it does make sense for the spring sports to get another year. Their seasons haven't started yet, and it would be really unfair if they would leave without having a full completed year. In our situation, as a winter sport, we completed the regular season. We just didn't get to the postseason. And in saying that, I have mixed feelings about it. Yeah, absolutely would love to have those players back, but sometimes, it's time for those four-year players to move on and get their lives going too. And, they will have their education and their degree in hand and get moving. You'd love to have those guys back. The other thing is we have incoming freshmen here. We need to give those players ice time and development time too. So again, like I said, I have mixed feelings about it, but I think at the end of the day, the NCAA probably made the logical choice of moving on.
Brad, you guys have been a power forever, all the way back to when you played and you've coached and certainly your conference and all over, a lot of great programs. But as far as college hockey, producing a ton of NHL players, is competition for recruitment probably at the highest it's ever been? Because it feels like there's a lot of great programs right now in the United States.
Well, there is. We talk about this all the time. When you look at, 10, 15 years ago, you'd always have the same household names for, top-end college teams that would be vying for an NCAA championship every year. But nowadays, there's so many players, so much great talent, in Canada, in the U.S., in some untraditional markets all over the place that players are coming from that, obviously one program can't have all the players. There are two programs that they have to get spread out, and that's why you're seeing the parity in college hockey right now. And, we've been blessed and fortunate enough to, obviously our team's comprised of 50% Americans, 50% Canadians, and that's a big deal for us. And, a lot of other programs are more so mostly all Americans on our team. But, again, like for us, we find it a great formula to have a 50-50 ratio in our group.
With Brad Berry, the head coach of the University of North Dakota men's hockey team. I'm assuming, Brad, you would have done, or most of your recruiting is done, as the hockey season is unfolding. Does everything being shut down, the ability to travel and to have your assistants and your recruiters go meet face-to-face, did that have any impact as far as the coming this fall's class go?
Not really. I think when you look at recruiting, we're at least 1 year and eventually 2 years out on recruiting here. So our players that are coming in are all set for the year. And then obviously 2 years from now, we're pretty much getting to that side of it right now too. So, I think it's mostly on the younger recruiting. I'm trying to identify and get out and see the younger players. But again, the NCAA came in last year kind of restricting ages on when you can contact and visit and different things on the recruiting side of young players. And I think it helps us to the fact that, you don't go after so young players that, in 2 or 3 years from now, things change as far as their developmental path, and you get more of a clear idea of how young players turn out. So, in that situation, it's kind of helped us a little bit on restricting us from going after young players.
Brad, you mentioned the makeup of the team 50-50. I remember the University of Minnesota, all the kids were American, almost all of them from in-state. Where does that directive come from, or the decision to make up of your roster, the fact that you can have 50%, I guess we'll say foreign, and 50% American?
Well, yeah, I think it's just, what your culture, what your program believes in that give you success. And when I use that word culture, I use it strongly here. We're 2 hours from Winnipeg, 1 hour from the Canadian border. So, we feel like, we're right next to Canada. We have that kind of that influence and that kind of belief system and how we play the game. And, for us, we've always had, when I played here and even before I played here in the 80s, we've always had a strong influence on Canadian players. And we just found that, when you have players from kind of all over coming together to mesh together, it makes you a pretty strong group. And I know there's other programs that kind of recruit regionally, and that's the way they do things. But for us, we've had a lot of success here from having players from Canada and from the U.S. come together to make one strong united team.
All right. So let's talk about, as we said, it's pretty unusual to have as many as three of one NHL team's prospects playing in any one, either college or junior program. You had that this past year with three Sens prospects playing for you. Just from just in your history in coaching and previous to that playing hockey, how unusual is that to see that?
Well, I think it's cyclical. I think, every now and then you get an organization that might have a couple of guys on your team. We've ever had three. We've had a few organizations have had a couple at certain times. But I think it goes to the fact that they're really good players. They're high end players that'll play in the NHL at some point in time. But I firmly believe it's having an organization like Ottawa right now that I think believes a little bit in how we do things on a day-to-day basis. And, for us here in North Dakota here, the resources and the infrastructure that we have here, we feel like we're the 33rd NHL team here, with our staff, with our players, with the way we conduct things on a daily basis. We try to emulate what the pro side of it does. And I think, Ottawa sees value in that.
Brad, you go back to when you were drafted. College players couldn't attend the draft. They couldn't get a pitcher. How important or how nice has it been? And Ottawa certainly led the way as far as their development program. The fact that these kids are able to come to Ottawa every year, I'm assuming with the strength and coach work in concert with you guys, how much does that help the process and help your program?
It tremendously. You know, I think, you know, we are always open here for, you know, feedback and the interaction with the teams that that draft our players here, whether it's the summer development camps, whether it's the development coaches coming down here or the strength coaches to give feedback and see the way we do things and offer ideas on how Ottawa likes to see things. So I think it's a really healthy way of doing business, and it builds that relationship with the players and the staff, and that's very beneficial.
Speaking to the head coach of the University of North Dakota men's hockey team, Brad Berry. So let's go through your players, Brad, one by one. We'll start with Jacob Bernard-Docker, who just finished up his second season for you, played on Canada's gold medal winning team at the World Juniors. So what sort of a season did he have in your estimation?
Yeah, you know what? I thought it was probably a tale of two seasons, actually. And I thought he had a solid season. In the first half he came in here, and I thought he was good. And then he went to... he had the World Junior tryouts in the summer, and then went there in December with the team, and obviously capturing the gold medal and being a pretty influential player on that team. It seems like it boosted his confidence, and it was a different player we got back after the World Juniors, and I thought he was very good in the second half of the season here. And he's a guy that he does all things very well, and power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5, and he's a guy that's going to play a long time in the NHL, and we're blessed to have him here. So again, I thought his development year was very good, especially in the second half.
Any one thing, any of these guys are kids, they all have to get stronger. Is there a facet of his game that you see needs to improve to go to the next level?
Well, I think when you talk about strength, I think that's exactly it. I think, when he came in here his freshman year, he had a good frame on him. He needed to put on some strength. He did that. And he's continuing to do that. And one of the things that we always talk about is just make sure that when you're ready to go, you have everything in your control to give you success at the next level. It's one thing to get there. It's another thing to stay there and have a long, prosperous career in the NHL. So, again, it's one of those things that, he's continuing to build his body to grow to play at that level.
Also drafted by the Sens from his same year, who just went through his second year with you, is Johnny Tychonic, who I think is a little less heralded only because he's not making World Junior teams, et cetera. But I know he's kind of been in and out of the lineup throughout the first 2 years, but as you assess his sophomore year, how was it?
So in saying that, your players all have different development paths. And with Johnny, for him, it's come a little bit harder for him. And I think it's just because of, in our league, the NCHC, and we feel it's the strongest league in college hockey. You're playing from players anywhere from 17 to 24 years old. And when you say 23, 24-year-old, they're grown men. And Johnny is he's not an overly big body, but he has ultra-compete. He has very good ability. And I think it's situations where, when he's a young guy playing against a heavier body in our league, it became evident that, he just needed to get a little bit stronger and a little bit sharper in a few different areas. I thought he also had a good second half of the year, and he came around there a little bit. And he's one of those guys that's going to take a little bit more time before he gets to the NHL level.
There is no farm team, and I believe there is no more junior varsity team. How much discipline does it take for a young man like that to continue the process if you're not playing, to make sure you're doing the right things on and off the ice to continue forward progress?
Well, that's a great question. And you know what? The one thing is you have to have unbelievable character and belief and trust, right? And I think, we always get into trying to recruit high-end players, but, the other part they have to check the box of is being an unreal teammate and a guy that believes in what, organizations do and programs do. Johnny Tychonic was outstanding as far as doing extra before practice, after practice in the weight room. He was always there to be, an everydayer. We call the guys that dig in everydayers, and he was one of those guys, and that's why that kid's going to have success. And again, it might take a little bit longer than a JVD, but it's one of those things that you can control what you control, and he did a lot of good things this year that way.
And Brad, as I said, we just haven't seen as much of him. What's the best part of Johnny Tychonic's game?
I think his vision and his hockey sense. I think it's one of those things when you look at when the puck's on his tape, excuse me, he makes that good first pass. He has that DNA always to jump up in the rush in the play, support the rush. And I think it's one of those things, a situation where you know, maturity of a game, his game is only going to get better in the strength side of it. And when that happens, when everything comes together, he's going to be a heck of a player.
All right, last but not least, Shane Pinto, who the Sens took in the second round in this past summer's draft. I don't know that a lot of people knew a whole heck of a lot about him. And the Sens pick him with the first pick of the second round, and it's kind of like, wow, what's this all about? Goes to North Dakota, and then boom, wow. I'll ask you this. How surprised were you at how much he was able to contribute statistically to your team this year as a freshman?
Well, you know what? I don't know if the word surprise would be something, you know, because you never know when a young player comes in how quick he's going to make that jump. But I think it was one of those things that was evident every time that he hit the ice, you know, through the first half and the second half. He got better and better and better. And I think one of the things that he did was he played prep hockey a couple years ago out in Connecticut. And, you know, he graduated in high school, and then he went and played a year in the USHL. And the USHL, you know, down here, it's more of a defensive league. There's not a, you know, it's a heavy, hard league. You know, offensive plays, you have to earn everything you get. And he came in his first year in the USHL, and he was outstanding. He scored a ton of goals. He made plays. And for a young guy the first year, that transcends into hopefully having success in college. Well, he did that here. And one of the things that he got better at was face-offs. You know, we have a young man here on our staff here that works with our forward group, and he absolutely loved to work with him on the face-off in the dot. And starting with the puck's a big deal. And he was over 60%. He was one of the top in the nation in face-offs, and he did a really good job that way. You know, he also went to the World Juniors, and when he came back too, he had a boatload of confidence here, and I think he was U.S.'s leading scorer at the tournament. So he had a lot of success here early on, and he was a big part of our team down the second half of the stretch here. You know, every D-zone start in the face-off dot, he went in there, won the draw, and he's going to be a big part of our group here next year, you know, even taking his game to the next level here.
What kind of character did he show, Coach? I believe after the World Junior, basically wanted to fly, was it all day, three different connections to get home and make sure he played on that Friday night?
Yeah, you know... Yeah, I got to tell you a story about that one. You know, we've had a couple guys out of World Juniors kind of have that same path coming back, having the fighter to play. And, you know, one of the things that we do here is we offer our players up to not only Canada, but the U.S. as far as playing World Junior. And saying that, you know, when they come back, it's usually after that weekend in the gold medal game or whatever it is, they come back and they have a chance to play in our group. Well, you know, especially when you're overseas or whatever, there's a lot of fatigue and different things coming into it. Well, he came guns a-blazing into the locker room or in the coach's room, and I sat him down and said, hey, Shane, here's the situation. You had a long stretch here, you know, and it might be a good idea maybe, you know what, to sit out the Friday night game, and then you can play this Saturday and get another 24 hours on you. And he kind of looked at me and goes, Coach, you know, you make the calls, but I want to play. I'm playing. I want to play, you know, and there was a fire in him. And again, I don't think you can teach that compete level or that desire or passion. He's got that. And, you know, going back to one other story, Tyson Jost was the same way when he went to World Juniors. He came back, we were on the road, and he met us, and he proceeded to throw up 6 points that night in the game where he was just playing on adrenaline. So, again, you love to have players like that come back and fight for your team.
With Brad Berry, the head coach of the University of North Dakota men's hockey team. So, as you mentioned, every player has a different development path. How much do you sit down with each one of these guys, all three of these Sens draft picks, and talk about, okay, I think you're ready. You'd love to keep them all 4 years, right? You're a college coach. You want to get greedy. But how many times do these discussions happen on, yeah, you're ready to go, or yeah, you should stay?
Well, again, you know, all three of those guys that we mentioned are all very different, right? And I think the biggest thing is, and we're very cognizant of this, when you get high-end players, there's not a chance you're going to keep them 4 years. Not a chance. But at the same time, I think it's one of those things where you have unbiased conversations with players and their families and their advisors and the NHL teams just to say, hey, you know, we all have to be on the same page here. And you know what? The one thing is, yeah, could you go? Yeah, absolutely. But what gives you the best chance, and I just mentioned it earlier, to not only get to the NHL, but sustain and have a long, successful career in the NHL? You know, there's so many, you know, I've been here and done this long enough where there's so many situations where players have gone on early and they really, you know, haven't sustained it. And at the end of the day, they go, geez, maybe I should have stayed another year. You know what? There's situations where players need, like Tyson Jost stayed 1 year and he left and he's up in Colorado right now. So, you know, there's all different facets and all different situations, but I think it comes down to each individual player and what's best for him. And again, like, we're more than willing to send players when they're ready to go, and I think that comes into conversations with all the people that are involved.
And I think most of us look at Barnard Docker, certainly a high-end prospect. Next stop would be the American Hockey League coach. Would you recommend, or do you think, and I know it's hard, you're the coach of UND, should he play in the American Hockey League next year?
Well, and you know, those are conversations that we're having right now. You know what I mean? Like, our season came to an abrupt end here a couple of weeks ago, and now we're kind of going through the situation with all of our players here right now to have those conversations on how they feel, how we feel, how the NHL teams feel, and how the families feel. And I think after that, I think there has to be a, you know, 100%, you know, idea of, yeah, I'm ready to go, or, you know, maybe I need another year yet. So, you know, we're just going through those conversations right now.
Well, and you guys have built up the trust. People recognize you're looking big picture, and you're also trying to win. Would you also look at a guy like Pinto as far as 1 year? Because I think there are some people wonder if Tyson Jost should have stayed more than 1 year and kind of look at him and say, hey, I know you had success. I know you're a late birthday, but certainly could benefit from another year at school.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we've never really had players that stayed 1 year and left. You know, in Tyson's situation, it was a hard year for him. You know, he went to a Colorado team that wasn't doing very well, and, you know, they had a pretty good year the year he went there. But, you know, he had guys like McKinnon and Landeskog and Rantanen, and those guys, like, they eat up a lot of minutes. And it's one of those situations where, you know, if you're going to go, you know, you got to earn everything you get, right? But at the end of the day, is it the right situation for you to develop? And I think, you know, Tyson right now would probably admit that, you know, maybe I should have came back for a second year. Leadership's a big thing too, you know, working on your leadership skills and being that guy on that team. And, you know, we feel Shane, you know, is going to be a guy for us this next year coming back that's going to be a huge leader on our team that's going to probably round out his team. He had a really good year, but he needs to round out a couple of things, and strength being one of them, and playing all situations and being another. Like, we just started putting him on the penalty kill at the end of the year. I think he can play a ton. He can play over 20 minutes a game, and he can play all situations next year. And then you get a kind of a full developed player ready to, you know, hit the ground running.
Is that final decision from Shane Pinto been made then, that he'll return next year?
Well, we have had discussions early on here already, and I think it's one of those things that, you know, we keep talking about it here. You know, we've had a couple players already come out right now. Jordan Kawaguchi is a undrafted player for us. He made a statement yesterday that he wants to come back and help lead our team here and get better as a player here. So, you know, he's an undrafted player that has played 3 years for us, and he's come out. So, you know, we're going to have conversations. And again, this isn't us trying to recruit players back to our program, you know, for selfish reasons. It's one of those things that things have to make sense. And at the end of the day, if the player's ready to go, you know, we're obviously open the door and shake their hand and give them a hug and say, hey, you're part of our family here. You'll always be part of our family. Good luck at the next level.
All right. And to end, just you personally, you know, when you're immersed in the world of hockey, be it at a pro level or in your case, a collegiate level, I mean, that's your life when the season is on. You know, obviously this has all come to a full stop. How do you deal with the hours of the day right now?
I don't know. It's one of those things. I got to go to work. I can't sit still. And, you know, even though there's no recruiting per se, you know, we can still be on the phone with families and players or prospective student athletes. Can't float and steam and different things. But, you know, whether it's, you know, recruiting a little bit over the phone, or whether it's, you know, getting ready for next year as far as doing video, or just, you know, I don't know, just trying to keep active here to get things moving. That's what we do here. And that's why it's a special place.
Would you take the advice of fellow alumni Mike Comnor and possibly get in one as well?
Hey, I'm way too old for that.
There you go. All right, good stuff. Lots of great insight there, Brad. Really appreciate it. Again, happy birthday, by the way, and thanks for the time this morning. Look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
Guys, thanks a lot for having me on. And again, obviously, we feel very blessed to have Ottawa believe in us as an organization here, and hopefully we can have some more players come through here.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Brad.
Yep, bye.
All right, there's Brad Berry joining us, the head coach of the University of North Dakota men's hockey team, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. It's a little past 9:30. We'll take a break. Back with much more as we roll on here. It is a Wednesday morning. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. There was lots of good stuff in there. Started with all the, well, obviously the great season they had at North Dakota. various points of the season, number one ranked team in the country, would have had a very good opportunity to win another NCAA hockey championship. Of course, season now canceled, and so it's only conjecture at this point. But as the talk turns to the three Sens prospects, and they're all at different paths right now, Simmer, the sense I got on Shane Pinto, and Brad kind of said it, and then you asked him directly about it,
yeah,
is that Shane Pinto, and you know, lots of people here talking and wondering if he was going to turn pro. It sounds like the impression I get is that he's going to go back to North Dakota for another season.
Yeah, and you know what? The conversation with Ottawa, and there's so much goes into this, but when you're a top program, every player that goes in there, that especially the high-end guys, they want to play in the National Hockey League. They have to feel that you have in their best interests for their big-picture hockey career. So as he pointed out, it's not like they're holding anybody back. They'll have a conversation. Ottawa may feel differently, but if I was to go off of that conversation and kind of where this is at after just playing 1 year, he is certainly not going to be hurt by going back and playing as a 19-year-old at the University of North Dakota next year.
Right. And I wonder, and it, you know, probably a decision will come sooner rather than later, may come, you know, in the case of Jacob Bernard-Docker, maybe today, maybe in the next few days or something like that. But a decision for a lot of these top-end prospects is going to come, you know, within the next week, 2 weeks, month, something like that.
Yeah.
I just wonder, you look at Ottawa, right, and they've got their organizational chart. He looks like, boy, you can pencil him in at some point as a center for this organization. But I'm wondering, but you don't know how the draft is going to play out, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to get one center? Are you going to get two centers? And how does that, you know, do you turn the guy pro now, but then, oh, well, you end up getting two centers. And you could never have too many of them, but you know what my point is? If you could know now what you're going to know 2 months from now, it might make a difference in what you decide to do or not.
Yeah, it could. And how many players you can have under contract, asset management. But once a player is drafted, because as you said, dealing with the unknown, if you're Ottawa, I think you have a general idea. But until you have a draft lottery, a projection of who you're taking, once you've drafted a player, first of all, you're thrilled with where Pinto was at. And maybe they knew this and going to a good program. He had one hell of a year. What you're trying to look at with him is what is the best path for him? And Pierre Dorion touched on this last year, and it is true. You have a different path for every single player, and that's a part of. And in the case of college, it's a little different because the player has to agree to want to leave school when you want him to leave. But in this case, like I said, that's where what's the best thing for him. And I wouldn't, like I said, I would have no worries if you're a Sens fan if he did one more year of college.
Now, Jacob Bernard-Docker, of course, just finished his sophomore season, so he's 2 years in. And listen, let's replay Brad's answer to, I think you put the question to him, would it be best to maybe jump to the American Hockey League? Here's Brad Berry's answer on that.
Those are conversations that we're having right now. You know what I mean? Like our season came to an abrupt end here a couple of weeks ago, and now we're kind of going through the situation with all of our players here right now to have those conversations on how they feel, how we feel, how the NHL teams feel, and how the families feel. And I think after that, I think there has to be a, you know, 100%, you know, idea of, yeah, I'm ready to go, or, you know, maybe I need another year yet. So, you know, we're just going through those conversations right now.
All right. So while he was fairly specific on Shane Pinto, and then when we kind of circled back to it, he's like, well, there's no final decisions, but, yeah, you know, he's talked about him in terms of being back with the team next year. With Jacob Bernard-Docker, that answer right there would suggest that certainly everybody's a lot more open-minded to the fact that he may turn pro now after this past season.
Yeah, and history tells you that when it comes to first-round picks and playing in World Juniors, most of the kids will do the 2 years of college. They'll turn pro with the 20-year-old group that would be in the Canadian Hockey League, so it makes sense. The only wild card that I would ever throw, and Cale Makar, I wouldn't say took flack, but Colorado wanted him to turn pro, and he went back for another year. You may end up with some players in some situations where this isn't about getting stronger, getting better. They feel like they lost out on the ability to win a national championship, and they may want to return. That to me would be the only wild card. If you look around the room and say, man, we got a hell of a group here. Could a player end up staying? And forget about Bernard-Docker, just anybody across the board, right? I think because if this had continued along and they finished their season, he's gone to a World Junior, he's a first-round pick, I'd say it's an automatic he turns pro. Do I think he's going to turn pro? Yes. But I think that would be my only, that would just be, because I know for kids that go to college, man, and I could say this for junior hockey to some extent, but some of those college guys, if you could tell them they could play 10 years at college, they'd stay for 10 years, you know, like the loyalty and the buy-in and being with your buddies. And hey, you're playing at a world-class program at UND.
Yeah, and you wonder whether the conversations don't involve the parents or the coach or the NHL team. The conversations are among the guys. Hey, are you going back? Because if you go back, maybe I'll go back.
Oh, it totally does. And that happens. And again, this is also to, you know what, do you want forward progress? But even in this case, and Brian Boyle was such a great example, people were highly critical that he wanted to keep going back to Boston College, but they were knocking on the door for national championships and I think lost to UND. Watched a game in Providence way back when Mike Commodore was playing. He wanted to go back. He and Gianna kept going back and people were upset. Hey, you know what? He turned pro. Well, he found his way to have a hell of a career. Big pitcher. I don't think it's going to happen, but if I got a word that Bernard Docker is going to go back into his junior year at college, I still think there's going to be forward progress. He'll get stronger. He'll get better. Wouldn't be the end of the world.
Right. Although you look at the kind of the chart, I guess, for the Sens and where they're at. Boy, that right shot defense. Lassie Thompson, I think it's pretty much a given that he's going to come and play in North America. I think Pierre Dorion has said as much. So
yeah,
you put him in to presumably Belleville to start next season. You know, maybe at this point you pen in him and you maybe pencil in Bernard Docker, depending on his decision. You'd like to turn him pro, but you understand that maybe he wants to go back, or maybe you've got the two that you hope will be the future stabilizing forces on your right side D for years to come at the NHL level.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you looked at the beginning of last year where the Brandstroms of the world are, and Willanen because of injury to Yarosh, not a lot of forward progress. Unfortunately for Ottawa, there's been a number of young players who come into the system, and I don't say it's by any fault, but they've had a tough time. Now, Thomas Chabot and Carlson, hey, the best of the best, but they really need to get a pattern here of developing and getting some forward progress, but more importantly, setting some of these young players onto the NHL roster.
All right, we'll take a break. Last final break, 9:50, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show. We're going to turn things over to Steve Lloyd and Graham Creech in the box coming up after 10. Ian and Lee are on the drive this afternoon at 2. Theming today and apparently into the future. I don't know how Sens fans feel about this. Talking to some Sens villains from over the year. Going to start with Jeff Friesen, the guy who scored the Game 7 game-winning goal from the 2003 Conference Final for the New Jersey Devils. Jeff Friesen will be on with the boys this afternoon on the drive as we continue along here. It is a Wednesday morning. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Got a text from somebody at 12-1200. As always, when you text, the standard messaging rates apply. When I just teed up the fact that Jeff Friesen is going to join the boys on the drive this afternoon, simply texted back, no, I'm not over 2003 yet. It's only been, what, 17 years? sometimes takes a little bit longer than others.
Yeah, unfortunate for that one, right? When you look back to that team, had they won a cup previously or won one after? But I think for most people feel like that was probably the best Ottawa Senators team ever. There was the opportunity, and after winning that game 6 on the Chris Phillips goal, it was almost like, ha, God, you got to win this one, and you got to go on and win the Stanley Cup.
I got a text from Gordon who writes, how do Canadian university hockey programs compare to the American ones? I went to a few University of New Brunswick games this year and was very impressed by the quality of the game. That comes from Gordon. I can tell you, Simmer, that UNB has been ranked as the number one team in Canada for much of this year and have won several national championships the last few years. So it's a very strong Canadian university program.
Yeah, no, and I, scouted them back in the day. Here's what it would be. You take UND, take Carleton, Ottawa U, if they go down and play some of the better U.S. schools, very good games. I mean, it's close, it's hard. What you have is a lot of the Canadian kids are between 20 and 24, same as the Americans, so physically very good. The only difference is that you're not going to have a Zegras or a Brady Tkachuk or a Bernard Docker, right? Like, the high-end prospect is the kid that played junior hockey, went on to turn pro, but very comparable, very good hockey, and in the competition between the two, this is one of the nice things that the Canadian Hockey League implemented, was the program where some of the education is picked up after you're playing junior, where you don't turn pro, that a lot of these guys are very good. So it's very comparable, just missing some of the high-end talent.
All right. Eric Macromella is by with another edition of Offside tonight at 6 o'clock, so we'll look forward to that. I am sure Eric will come up with some unique angles to everything that's going on around the world of sports these days. Again, to bring you up to date, there were there wasn't a whole heck of a lot as far as COVID-related sports news from yesterday. The one that did come out was from the City of Toronto, which will affect a couple of upcoming events. The City of Toronto has banned any gatherings until of anything more than, I think, five people until the end of June. So we got a couple events coming up that are big on the calendar in June in Toronto, one being the Queen's Plate, the first leg of Canada's Triple Crown. We're talking about a horse race that's been held every year since 1880.
Yeah.
That right now, well, they're talking about a potential postponement of the Queen's Plate till sometime later in the summer. If not a postponement, an outright cancellation. The other is the Canadian Open. Of course, got moved just this past year, a year ago, to the first week or two of the month of June. Finally got a good slot on the calendar. It was scheduled to be held at the St. George's Club in Toronto this year, in downtown Toronto. That would be affected by this as well. So Canadian Golf Association talking to the PGA, et cetera. So there's the, it won't be held at St. George's. We know it won't be held. I mean, yeah. We're being realistic about it. It's not going to be a golf tournament in the month of June here in Canada. So will it be a postponement? Can they find a spot for it on the calendar if there is professional golf played at some point later in the year? Or do they just say, you know what, too many logistical hurdles to get over. We'll just cancel it for this year and hope to be back in 2021.
Yeah, we'll be watching all of that and certainly proud of the way we've handled this as Canadians. But I also wonder, JR, kind of weather-wise, have we been somewhat fortunate that it isn't, you know, real hot outside? We've kept people in. When you look down to the United States, what's happened in spring break, kind of that. And talking to some people down in Phoenix, almost all of the high-end golf courses in Phoenix are still operating. Basically, it's like, hey, you know what, we're going to take our chances. Curious how we'll handle some of those things, including outdoor activity as our weather gets a little bit better. So hopefully in some ways that's a bit of a savior for us.
I walked, because I live in the area of the golf course, I walked the golf course last night with the dog, and they had uncovered the greens, and oh my God, oh, it's so good. Like last year was a disaster for all golf courses across, you know, all of, you know, Eastern Canada, right? We had all the ice and the snow and the long spring and everything, and the courses got beat up terribly. Oh, boy, man alive, it's like carpet. So, and you can't play, you know, of all, not just because we're not ready weather-wise just yet.
Yeah.
But, of course, right now, golf clubs can't open.
Yeah.
They're like everybody else, and I get all that part of it, but it's just weird the way it works, right? Last year, you know, terrible conditions. You couldn't get on a golf course, you know, in nice weather until the 1st of June. This year, the weather is turning nice. The golf courses are in unbelievable shape, and for the time being, we're all on pause.